This is Women's Voices and Women's Stories on Yin Radio, and I'm your host, Sandy Billings. Ever feel like you're talking to a brick wall? That no matter what you say or how often, your ideas just aren't getting through? To be heard, we do need a listener, and we have to know how to talk, to use the tools at hand. These tools include our voices and the media. That's what today's show is all about, being heard. I have a collection of pieces for you that start with using our personal tool, our voice, and then I move on to tools of media, specifically radio and television. It's a collection of pieces that you've heard on Yin Radio and some I've never aired before. From KRFP in Moscow, Idaho, this is Yin Radio. The theme of today's show is being heard. Being heard is about speaking up and speaking out. Voice coach Pamela Bathurst has some tips in this first installment. Now be ready to use your voice as you listen to this piece and try the exercises that she shared with us at the workshop that she presented in the 2008 Athena Women's Leadership Conference at the University of Idaho.
This is basically about the way we communicate and how we sound when we communicate. How do we get to be where we are? How do we get our voices the way they are? Why do we sound like this? We sound like this for many reasons. We sound like the way we sound because we grow up with families who sound like that. You know, the Godfather families, and they all got that kind of voice, you know, as they talk, that kind of Godfather-y kind of voice. I had neighbors who talked like that. The whole family talked like that. Women talked like that, too. Had this kind of sound to their voices. and the idea of people around us, you know, if we're surrounded by a group of people and they have certain accents or certain inflections, Valley Girl inflections or accents from different parts of the country, we tend to pick that up too. And we don't even know it. It's like our habits with gestures and facial expressions. Those around us, it just absorbs inside of us. Along with that is the way we hold ourselves. We hold ourselves the way our parents hold themselves or the people around us hold themselves. So that affects the way we sound. But that there is hope for everybody, no matter where you come from or no matter what kind of background you've had, no matter what kind of stress. Stress is terrible for the throat. What is the first thing you feel when you're really stressed? You feel a tightness in the throat, right? If you feel like you're going to cry, you feel a lump in the throat. That's why we get shrill when we get angry. You know, our voices go up and up and up and up and up as we start talking to people. And we just, it's just like somebody's grabbing us right here, right around the throat. We can change that. We can open that. It has to do a lot with relaxation. Has to do a lot with posture, has to do a lot with just who we think we are concept-wise, and we'll talk about that a little bit, because that's probably one of the biggest deals that I deal with my students for when they're taking voice, is what they feel they sound, who they feel they sound like. And if they sound like this, if they've always sounded like this, their parents sound like this, then who are they to change, right? So there's kind of this big leap that we have to jump over in order to be able to change ourselves. What I would like for you to do is I would like for you to think about your own voices, and I would like you, just as you are thinking about your own voice, to turn to the person next to you, shake hands, tell them, hello, my name is, and just kind of listen to your own voice. Don't listen to the other person's voice, listen to your own voice.
Hi, my name's Sandy Billings.
Hi, Sandy. I'm Roxanne Shrek.
Hello, I'm
Pamela. It's hard to do that and not be self-conscious after thinking about voice.
Now you have to get as quiet.
As you did that, did you feel self-conscious at all? Not at all. Just felt just like you could just say it. Were you aware of what was coming out of you? Could you hear the sound of your own voice amidst everybody else's sounds in here? Yeah? Yeah. Is there anybody who thinks their voice is just exactly where it wants to be? Now everybody feels like there's room for improvement.
Yeah.
I think there's always room for improvement. I think about it all the time. I think that I have my students put little sticky notes all over the place so that they think about it all the time. It's the idea of taking what we've got and moving on. So let's take what we've got and move on. First thing is that we have to decide what kind of presence we want to portray for the people in front of us. And in doing so, in choosing our best presence, we also choose the best setup for a voice to come out of us. So our best presence is lining up so that you've got basically ear over shoulder, over hip, over knee, and over ankle. So those of you who don't have like back problems or something, if you can kind of get into that position. And what I have my students do is I have them raise their hands up. Now, as you're up there, your rib cage is up. If you let your rib cage down, can you do that? Just kind of bend your elbows. Yeah, feel that down. Now up. Feel the difference? Now, as you lower your arms, the rib cage stays up. And it may feel very weird, especially at first. And then you let your shoulders be loose, but the rib cage stays up. You find within that, you find a comfort. It cannot be stiff. It cannot be tight, otherwise it tightens everything through here. Everything is involved in the throat. So the idea of up. It doesn't look weird if you turn around and look at everybody. Nobody looks weird. everybody looks like they're confident, like they have good posture and they're confident. So the next thing is the breath. We have the ability to breathe so that, in fact, I think that most of us have never taken a good breath. And a good breath is not a big breath. It's not a breath, you know, overfilled kind of breath. It's a breath that feels like it's an unfolding from inside. So if you think about your lungs, which are about from here to here, and they're three-dimensional, not just front, and if you think about them unfolding three-dimensionally and slowly, right from the middle of it, can we do that? And not over, and then out. And then do that again, and not so much that you feel tight. It's like a release, and that's what you want. So we're upright, and we have this wonderful breath that expands. And as we do that, we make weird sounds. And some of the weird sounds are, it's like this earthy, earthy, earthy sound. So like we're drawing it from the very center of the earth, and we're opening up all the way, all the way, all the way, and it doesn't get stuck here and pool, but the energy moves all the way out to whomever you're speaking to. So if you have, comes from here and there's no roadblock. It just flows all the way. Can we do that? Yes, we can. So we're upright. We have this wonderful sound. Doesn't have to be really loud. Breathe. And. Ooh. Yeah, now, let's see the difference between our woo sound and our not ooh sound, all right? So this one I want you to do, ooh, this is shallow. This is ooh, kind of from collarbone up, okay? So no, none of this, it's here. So kind of a breath, and ooh, yeah, now hold your head up, okay? Now do it again, ooh, you feel it through here? Isn't that nasty? It's the idea. How many of you feel like when you're talking to somebody, some of you are taller, but me, you know, I've got big heels on, but me, I went through life like this. Almost everybody was taller, and I talked to everybody like this. And so no wonder, you know, if I was having to talk a lot at the end of the day, I could feel it through here, an uncomfortable feeling through here. So watch that you're lined up the way you were made to be lined up, and you have this clear channel all the way. Can we do that one more time? And this time all the way from the bottom. And there's just this open ooh sound. Have you heard an owl? and it's kind of this hollow, woody sound when they make that sound. It's almost, it's uncanny, really. Let's think of that. Ready? Okay, this is another together one, since you're all good participants. Let's say, I like life.
I like life.
Very good. Okay, this the next line is, life likes me.
Life likes me.
This is from Scrooge. This is from the musical. I like life, life likes me.
I like life, life likes me.
Oh, you're very good. Okay, what we want is we want to find what kind of sounds we can make, all right, with that. So we're going to do extremes, okay? We're going to have a pulled kind of shallow sound first. Everybody know who Christian Chenoweth is? Popular, it's going to be popular, that kind of thing. That's she talks like this. It's a choice for her because I've heard her sing, and there's other stuff in there, but she chooses, she's in musical theater, and she chooses to speak that way for her stage presence. That's what she uses. Then you hear people like Lauren Bacall, who has a very low voice. It's gotten lower, she's gotten older. It's a resonant voice, but it's very low. What we want to do is we want to find what is our best pitch. Where should we be speaking that's going to not put strain and drain on our throats, okay? You think, well, how do I do that? I talk up here or I talk down there. I tend to go lower and lower and lower, and especially if I'm on the phone, then I start getting really low as I start talking and I start feeling, and then I pull it back up again, pitch-wise. The way you can find, an easy way that you can find what basic area you're supposed to be speaking in is by saying mm-hmm. So if you're there and you're going to agree with me, I'm going to say, you know, the sky is purple today.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, do it again. The sky is green today.
Mm-hmm.
All right, do you feel where your mm-hmms are? Mm-hmm. You mm-hmm. Yeah? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, your mm-hmms give you a basic idea. Mm-hmm. It's like your mid-range pitch. Isn't that fun? It's like your mid-range pitch. We speak way higher, we speak way lower, but basically we should be in the mm-hmm range in order to be healthy. This is what people who work with speech, problems with people have them do. It's one of the things they have them do is the mm-hmm. So if you're speaking higher than that, if you talk up here and your mm-hmm is there, or if you talk down here and your mm-hmm is there, then you need to think about that if you're having any vocal problems, or if you want to find your best sound. So now we know where our mm-hmms are, right? Mm-hmm. So now let's do the I like life again. Huh? So I like life, life likes me. We're going to do one by one. Ready? Breathe.
I like life.
Life likes me. Good. Yeah? Is that different than what you're used to? Or is that basically where it is? You have to think about it. Is that higher? Much higher? Is that really weird feeling? Some of my students go, no, that's not me. And yeah, it is them. But they're, you know, they've got family at home that's going to say, what is wrong with you? You know, they come home and they start speaking higher or lower. Okay, so we've got our mm-hmm, we've got our basic pitch range. Now we're going to find what color can we use in our voices. When we say, that's not me, when we say, I talk like this, that is not me. What we're really saying is, I prefer to use this 30% and leave that 70% alone. Because the 70%, when you put it together with the 30%, that's you. And that's the thing with when I'm teaching that I have to convince them of. Thank goodness there are older students there who have been through all of this and are very influential on the newer ones coming in. But basically, as a group of us, We don't use all of what we've got. When I'm speaking here, I speak with a little bit more resonance than I would speak one-on-one. I don't have to be loud. I can still speak with lots of resonance and make it very soft. But I can also get so loud that people can hear me and I don't need a microphone in the auditorium. It just depends, and there's not any strain in that. It's just opening up. And what you want to do is you want to find all the colors that you've got in your speech, in the sound of your voice, and not leave any of them. It's like you come and you have primary colors, and this is what you carry around with you for your life. But there are all these other colors, these shades and rainbows of colors that you never explore. And your own speaking voice, not to mention the world benefiting from listening to beautiful sounds coming out of you whenever you speak, is left behind. So how do we go about finding those colors in our own voice? We go about by doing weird things. I go about by doing weird things. Some of the weird things are... Now, we did the ooh, that was nice. Some of the weird things are doing vowels and putting them in sentences. So we have ooh-wee, ooh-wee, ooh-wee. Can everybody kind of imagine what that sounds like in your mouth and come out with it? Ooh-wee, ooh-wee, one of those. Ready, and ooh-wee, ooh-wee. That was lovely. Let's do it again. Ooh-wee, ooh-wee. Okay, remember that breath that we did when we unfold inside? What I'd like you to do is I'd like you to think about that breath as you breathe, and I'd like the rest of your body to follow suit. So it's not just here in the lungs, but it's the whole body. And in truth, if you think about, I'm going to go on a tangent. If you're in a big city, we have body, we have space around us. It's our own space. But if you're in a big city, sometimes our own space is this. I don't know if you've been in subways in New York. There is no space. I mean, their skin is merging with your skin. Every single inch of your body almost is merged with somebody else in those when you're being packed in to those subway cars. Then we have Idaho, you know, it's open spaces. And the idea of our space is much bigger. We start to grow, and as we grow, we come from this kind of very, very pinched, very, very stringy kind of sound where everything is like this to opening up and flowering, so everything relaxes and everything opens, and all of a sudden we have color in our voice, and we can all do that. So what I would like you to do is stand up again. I want hands firmly glued to your sides, feet glued to each other. Okay? Uncomfortable, right? We're in Idaho. As we take a breath, I would like you to take a breath within this body. You can think of unfolding. Unfolding's fine, but take a breath within this, only this space. And I would like you to do another ooey, ooey. So here we are here, and take a breath.
Ooh-wee, ooh-wee.
Yeah, let's do it again. Ready, and...
Ooh-wee, ooh-wee.
Good. Okay, I would like you to separate your feet a bit. Something comfortable, shoulder width apart. I would like you to feel when you take your breath that you expand all the way to your fingertips. And this is not just side to side, this is front and back. We're three-dimensional all the way. Okay? So, right out here, take a breath in. Another ooey.
Ooey, ooey.
Do you feel a difference with that? And you may have to go sideways. There's not a whole lot of room in there. Okay. Yeah. So let's do that one more time. Okay? Hands here. One breath in.
Ooey, ooey.
Okay. Now we're going to expand. As we expand, everything expands. Throat is relaxed and wide. Everything's wide, and we're breathing.
Ooh-wee, ooh-wee.
Do you feel a difference between that? And the thing is that we tend to be afraid to take up our space. We're afraid of that. And even if I'm really close to somebody, my space can still be there and her space can still be there. It's not like we have to, you know, we have to indent. or something. Okay, my arm's over here, but over here it's over here. We can still take up our own space. If we merge with other people, that's great, that's fine. in a certain sense. So the idea of space this way, yeah? Now, as you're speaking, and we've got this I like life thing going, right? I want you to speak this way one more time. But I'd like you to speak I like life and breathe this way. Ready? And.
I like life.
Okay. Now we know how to do this. Wonderful breath in. This relaxes and opens.
I like life.
Oh, what a difference. Wow. Can you hear that in this whole room? This helps. You could be a good choir. This is what we have. This is us. The other is a percentage of us. And we deserve all of this.
Pamela Bathurst. She's a lyric soprano and associate professor of voice at the University of Idaho, where she teaches studio voice, freshman voice studio, vocal pedagogy, and history of musical theater. You're listening to Yin Radio, an hour of women's voices and women's stories. We're exploring how to be heard this week. Up next, women on the radio. Edie Hilliard is a leader in radio. She's headed up radio stations, a Seattle-based syndication company, and a national radio programming company focused on women's programming. Brittany Perrault interviewed Edie Hilliard in early 2007 about the importance of radio and of the importance of women being heard on radio.
What I wanted to talk about is the importance of radio in general. What's your opinion on the significance, you know, competing with the modern media styles today?
I think it's extremely important that we keep radio as the people's medium. It's free. It has the potential of being the, and is often, the first medium turned to in the case of emergency. Its challenge and its obligation is to serve the public interest. I think it's doing a bad job of that now, generally. And I think some things need to change. I'm extremely concerned about the loss of audience that radio is incurring. And they are incurring, especially with the younger audience, women, teens. Women particularly are finding less and less of interest on radio. And there are a lot of reasons for that, I think. Radio is the only medium that doesn't have any kind of meaningful spoken word programming, informational programming for women. Mm-hmm. Unlike television with its Oprah and Ellen and The View and Dr. Phil and all those shows that talk about issues that matter to women. Unlike newspapers, which have whole sections devoted to the interests of women, unlike the 40 or 50 or 60 magazines that are devoted to women, unlike cable and the internet, radio is really the only medium that doesn't play in that arena. Sadly, because women are the most wanted audience for advertisers, for marketers.
Well, I was going to ask also if there was anything you feel could be improved within mainstream radio today. What would you think that would be?
Oh, absolutely. I think that the radio needs to be more local. I think that there need to be more women involved in determining what the formats will be. Unfortunately, the people who control those decisions about what will be programmed on radio stations are almost exclusively male. Almost all the owners of radio stations are male. In fact, only 3.4% of the almost 12,000 radio stations in the United States, AM and FM stations, are owned 50% or more by women. I think it's 484 stations out of 12,880 stations, 50% or more owned by women. Almost all the general managers are women. Well, I have the exact numbers. It's 15% are women and 85% men. They're the ones that control formats, decisions, changes. The programmers, it's even worse. There's only 9 to 10% of the radio stations in the United States are programmed by women. And as a consequence, women's views. Women really don't have a voice on the radio. And one of the reasons there are so few programmers is that there are so few women actually on the air. You really need that on-air experience in order to know what the job is, in order to be a program director and be able to coach and guide and improve the quality of the on-air presence of your disc jockeys or your personalities, whether they're men or women. And so few women have that on-air experience. So there's no women in the pipeline even coming through from on-air to program director to general manager to regional or owner. It's interesting, I talked to an FCC commissioner last week, Debbie Tate, one of the women, I think maybe she's the only woman on the FCC, I'm not sure. But she's one of five commissioners. And she was talking to me about how the FCC is encouraging women to apply to own radio stations, and they've set aside certain funds, and they've made particular advantageous lending practices for women. She doesn't realize that there are no women who are coming through the pipeline who are learning how to operate radio stations so that they can actually qualify by virtue of their experience to own radio stations. Mm-hmm. Women need to own more radio stations, but they have to come through the pipeline. They have to learn how to do that. So that's really a focus that I'm working on now with some other individuals who have an interest in this, in seeing more women get into the pipeline. And now that we have a Democratic Congress, there's some interest there in seeing that radio, of all media, radio should be a reflection of our population. But women don't have a voice. More than half the population don't have a meaningful voice on radio, and neither do other minorities, for that matter, on most stations. The difference with women and with minorities, however, is that at least there are urban stations. There is a company, Radio One, that programs to the African American community and has stations throughout the country and supplies programming to other stations, even non-owned stations that target that community. Hispanic stations have sprung up all over the country. There are two major companies that are playing in that arena, plus program suppliers. There's nothing like that for women. The other voice that's missing in radio is the moderate to liberal voice. The talk stations in the United States are 89% conservative. The ones that are political. Mm-hmm. 89% conservative, 11% progressive. There's really nothing much in the middle. There are the mainstream news talk stations that are doing quite well in all the major markets. There'll be one. But the interesting thing is the stations that are doing the very best, in fact, the top-rated stations in almost every single major market are the NPR stations. Mm-hmm. And we've seen rapid growth in the NPR audience. And that tells you that, and there's a corresponding decline in listenership on the commercial side. It's very interesting with women, for example. If you look at the 18 to 34 demo, the audience has declined in the last 7 years on commercial radio stations. Women, 18 to 34, there is 22% less listening in 7 years. Less time spent listening. Almost as big a cume. Mm-hmm. People tuning in, but they're just not spending as much time because they don't find it satisfying. Right. During that same period, 25% increase in women's listening to NPR. That tells you they're looking for information, they're looking for something they can't get on commercial radio. Mm-hmm. And when you have only music stations, which FM stations are what women listen to, they're only music, they're not getting that kind of information.
That's interesting that you brought that up, because I was going to ask as to why you, in some of the work that you've done previously, decided to move from not playing music to more of a talk radio sort of thing. So is that why you did that?
Actually, no, I retired. Oh. I retired. Well, I ran the first half of my career I was on the station side, and I was on, for example, at KJR in the late 70s and early 80s, and then I ran King AM, and those were both music stations. But in those days, those big rock radio stations, and there were some in almost every market, most of them were AMs, and we also had very strong news departments, so that you had that mix. You had somebody could listen to a rock and roll radio station, a KJR or a King or a KFRC in San Francisco or WLS, I mean, you name all the big old AM rockers, and get the basic news that you needed to know, what was going on that day, both locally and nationally, And that all changed with DREG. And then, so after I was on the station side, I went into the syndication side and supplied programming to radio stations and began programs like Delilah and Leah and some other personality things that we syndicated. I did that. That was a business decision because there was such an opportunity after consolidation mm-hmm. for program suppliers. If you could find talent, that would be better than stations could afford locally or even find locally and make it available to stations for essentially for inventory for minutes every hour, commercial minutes every hour, you could make a lot of money. And that's how we managed to grow the small syndication company that we had into a very large syndication company that then was acquired by a network. But it was still all pretty much music. The industry is so controlled by men who are really pretty convinced that women don't want anything other than music on the radio stations. Pretty convinced that the only talk that will work is hot political talk, either conservative political talk a la Rush Limbaugh or hot talk a la Howard Stern or Tom Likas, neither of which appeals to women. And the numbers are there. In Arbitron, you can tell women don't listen, don't like the research that we've done. When I left radio in 2003, I just decided there were other things I wanted to do in my life while I was still young enough and healthy enough to do them. There really was no opportunity for any kind of talk that would be different than what was currently being done, the hot talk, the conservative talk. However, things have changed in the last 3 or 4 years in that there is that attrition of music listeners. They're going to the iPod, they're going to the internet, they're going to some wireless radio pretty soon. There's all kinds of places to go for music, and people are going elsewhere for music. And as they go elsewhere for music, the only thing that radio is going to ultimately be able to do that can't be cheaply got anywhere else is talk. Mm-hmm. And if all stations do is transfer that conservative, male-oriented talk from AM to FM, which is where the music is now, but which is losing its audience, they won't have any women listening. And so... when I was approached by Gloria Steinem and Jane Fonda and a group of women who, after the 2004 election, got together and started thinking about what could be done, make radio available and interesting and accessible to women, I started looking. I contacted a lot of my contacts in the industry, the friends that I still had at every level, the programmers, the owners, the managers, syndicators, and said, well, what's changed? And the trends have changed because the audience is going away, because people are moving away from music. The general consensus is that talk is moving to FM and that it's, quote, time for female talk. So we developed a product, but I'll tell you, it's the biggest challenge I've ever faced in my radio career, because they are scared. The people who make those, the gatekeepers, all men at every level, from owners to managers to program directors, being so heavily dominated by men, are scared to death of something that isn't proven until we get a major success on a single radio station. When we do, and that'll eventually happen, when we do, it's a lemming business and it'll happen. But until then, it is a huge, huge challenge to even get them to be serious about it.
That's with almost anything with women, you know, trying to take the dominant role, which in our society is seeming to be virtually impossible or unacceptable, really, you know. And it's interesting to challenge the norm, and it's, you know, they need proof. There has to be some kind of a proof, and until then, you're right, I think that it's not, they aren't going to take us seriously until we can finally prove somehow that.
Well, I'm sure you encounter this in your in women's studies and in the other arenas that you play in. If people think you're a, quote, feminist, the assumption is, or if they think you're in women's studies, or if they think you're advocating for women, whether it's a women's radio format or any particular advocating for women, the assumption is that you're against males. And that is such a stupid assumption. and it's such a counterproductive assumption. You know, I am one of those affirmative action babies. In 1975, I was allowed to go into sales because affirmative action required radio stations, which are federally regulated licenses, to allow women into sales and into management. And prior to that, there were almost no women in either sales or management or programming, still true in programming. But once women got into sales, they quickly proved themselves, and within about 10 years, at least in Seattle, and I've heard that it's true in most other major markets, more than half the salespeople were women. It showed that they could do it. And that's what it took then to move into sales management, and then that experience into management. So without a Gloria Steinem and a Jane Fonda and what they did in the late 60s and early 70s, I and most other women who are in significant executive careers today would not be where they are.
What's the importance of women being out there and having their voice be heard?
Well, women are more than half the population, and if their voice isn't being heard, if women don't learn about what's going on, A, in the world, but with other women, with the issues that really matter. I mean, women, you know, primary responsibility for child care, primary responsibility for health care, primary responsibility in many cases for income. 62%, 80% of women are employed in the workforce, 62% I think it is, are the primary wage earners in their households. It includes all the single mothers and so on, and women who are married as well. And so they really need to be informed about all those issues that matter to them. The problem if especially in radio, which is the sort of the, I believe it's the people's medium, it's the one that 94% of the people still tune into every single week, and if they don't find their voice there, if they don't find relevant information presented in a way that they can respond to, they're not going to use it. Either they're not going to learn that information, or they're not going to continue to use that media. They're not going to be able to engage in discussion. In radio in particular, and again, that's the industry that I'm most familiar with and most passionate about, we know through our own research, we know intuitively, but we also know through hard research, that women really dislike polarizing, angry, confrontative talk. What they do, women talk in stories. Women share experience. Women share feelings. They're really interested in knowing what's going on. Women crave information. Women buy more books than anybody. Women buy all those magazines. They're interested in transformation. They're interested in what's happening in other people's lives. They really want to know what's going on with women around the world. Mm-hmm. And so that's why it's so important that our media address those things and give women a voice, so that the listener has something, someone to identify with, someone whose life view is similar to theirs, that they can share with, that they can learn from. And without it, I think, you know, you started the interview by asking what I think is going to happen with radio, or, you know, is it savable? Unless we figure out how to reach back and touch the lives of the constituencies that make up a democracy, women, moderates, unless we are able to get back and be local and deal with the issues in local in a way that's interesting. It's got to be interesting. It's got to be, it doesn't have to be funny, entertaining. It has to be entertaining that in that it has to be compelling. Mm-hmm. It has to be presented in an articulate way, in a way that people can grasp, understand, and respond to. And if radio can do that, it'll survive. If it doesn't, but you know, it is the voice of the people. Those are the, I think it's Commissioner Cops, FCC Commissioner Cops, who described it as the voice of the democracy. And in a democracy, you need the entire population. Democracy is strengthened by its diversity. Radio will only be strong as it's diverse and representing all of its constituencies.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Brittany Perrault interviewed radio leader Edie Hilliard for Yin Radio in 2007.
Being heard is the theme of this Yin Radio program, and we're going to stay on topic with an example of using radio to listen and to express ourselves. Installment number 3. Author of Mother Speak, Susan Gallimore, collected stories from around the world from mothers and fathers of soldiers and from the soldiers themselves. Susan Gallimore's son is a soldier. Susan has talked to people in Israel and Palestine, Iraqi refugees in Syria, Lebanon, and of course, in the United States. And she uses independent radio to share these stories and insights. This installment is from a presentation that Susan Gallimore made in Moscow, Idaho, in November 2009.
So I'm going to tell a story, and this is a story about Ruth. Ruth is about 92, and she lives in Northampton, and she caught on pretty quickly that the world needed to learn more about peace, and she was working with the troops when she, during the very early part of the Vietnam War, she was bringing troops down into her basement and telling them how to resist war. And so I did an interview with her, and she said to me, you know, we really struggled to bring Democracy Now! Into Northampton. And I went to their local radio station and I told them they had to have it, and they said they didn't want it because it was a little too extreme. And so we just kept on, and finally I found someone who would help me. And what we did was we got a microphone and a speaker, and we threw it over the tree in my backyard, and we started blaring out Democracy Now! And the people in Northampton, it's a real strong sense of what's right and the right way to live and the right way to treat the earth. And so those people started listening into her daily broadcast over her tree of Democracy Now! And they went back to the radio station. They said, you know, people are interested. And they said, we still don't want it. So what they did then was they started a fund drive to compete at the same time as the radio station was doing their fund drive. And they made more money than the station. And then they bought their way in. And they got Democracy Now! On their local radio. And so I love that story because it's really people taking control of what they want to hear. And I grew up in apartheid South Africa. And apartheid South Africa was managed by censorship. We did not have a real press. I mean, there was some pretty heavy censorship going on. We had movies were censored. There was a movie board that would check all the movies that they before they came in. So we weren't seeing things like Diary of a Mad Housewife. We weren't seeing Bonnie and Clyde. There was, of course, also a black market where you could get some of these things, but they were not available in the regular theaters. The other thing that was banned were books. Books were banned. And music. I remember that the best way to get music really popular in town was to hear that it had been banned. And Under the Boardwalk by the Rolling Stones was banned. And the Beatles were banned. And it wasn't because of their music, it was because John Lennon said, man, we're more popular than Jesus Christ. They banned them. So, you know, I grew up with this thing of understanding at some level that there was power in knowledge. When my son went to Iraq, and I was so, well, when he was in Afghanistan too, I was so worried about what was happening to him, and I was very isolated. I started reaching out to other people, other mothers, other military families, and I realized that they didn't really know what was going on, and I also knew that they were not going to get it out of the newspapers. They were not going to hear it on TV. And that's another reason why I decided to go to Iraq, to hear those stories. And of course, as you know now, that grew into a really long, involved, several-year project, going to Israel and West Bank, Lebanon, Syria. I didn't go to Afghanistan, but I shared stories from Afghanistan. And when I came back from Iraq, there was this big deal. Oh, this mother had gone to talk to her kid on the base, you know? And so a lot of TV shows wanted me to come on board, and I was like, oh, I wonder what this is about, but okay. It very quickly came clear to me that I was being used in a way. One, a news station set me up. They didn't tell me. It was a satellite news station. Didn't tell me that I was going to be faced with Barry McCaffrey, the retired Colonel General Barry McCaffrey. And he started telling me that I had gone there as a political ploy. And I said to him, well, you know, it's not a political ploy, but I'm not going to really go into it with you because I think it takes a mother to understand. And something about that really touched a nerve. And MSNBC came to me and said, oh, would you be our mother spokesperson? And I thought about it and I thought, you know, I really don't want to be their spokesperson or anybody's spokesperson in this way for television, because it's going to be a matter of time before they start telling me what I can be thinking and what I can't be thinking. And this was also one of the reasons that I decided to publish my book with a British publisher. It's kind of a radical publisher, a Pluto Press, because when I started running into what was happening here, it was, oh, you can't really talk about Israel that way, or you can't really talk about what's going on there that way. And I thought, you know, this is my book. I don't need you guys telling me what the truth is. And so I decided to go with an English publisher. And there's been some downsides to that, but I haven't regretted that. So when I gave up this, you know, when I realized that I really didn't want to be a kind of media, what do they call, media whore on TV, I ran into a friend who had a blues show in on Stanford Radio, and he started talking to me about doing radio, and I was like, I'd done some work on KPFA, which is a Pacifica radio in Berkeley, and I didn't really like the politics there very much, but I liked what we were doing. We were doing a show called The Voices of the Middle East and North Africa, and I said, well, look, I'm not Middle Eastern, I'm not North African, I'm South African, and that may not be the kind of voice you want, but we worked together for a while. And then this friend offered me an hour, and I knew nothing about radio other than being on the mic at KPFA, and I had to be air cleared, and I had to then have this huge board in front of me, and I had to know which buttons to push and which CD, and it was very, you know, complicated in the moment. And so what I started doing was I continued. I really liked it in a way because they were not telling me what I had to say. They were not telling me what I had to do. I do it all by myself. So I started doing it more at home, and I have friends who help me. I got a mixer and I got a better mic, one of which is clipped on right here. And I've started doing the show myself. I do shows out of Israel, Palestine, sometimes with Skype. I've done them from Turkey. I do a lot of shows based in the United States, of course, on the phone, sometimes, you know, locally. I don't go down to the station so much anymore. But the only thing that they've had me do is do a disclaimer. So I have to do a disclaimer at the end of my show. Then I discovered that they were doing a disclaimer. The guy whose three-hour slot I owned was doing a disclaimer at the beginning of my show. And when he knew I was doing shows in Israel or the West Bank, he would actually stop and do a disclaimer in the middle of my show. So it's, you have to be very careful about certain topics, but they haven't really shut me down, and I have been able to do whatever I want to do. And my idea of what we need is we don't need sound bites. I think there are people out there doing news, and they're doing it really well, Amy Goodman being one of those people. But I prefer to take a topic and get an expert to talk, not even an expert, whatever that is, to talk about his or her expertise from, you know, how did it start, what is it about, and really start to try and create a dynamic of creating pictures that people can begin to fit the pieces in. And now and again I'll do like two half-hour slots or something, but most of the time I will do real in-depth shows. There are certain topics that are very, very popular because no one else is doing them. Armenia, the genocide, the whole thing that's going on in that area, Central Asia, is something that not very many other stations are touching, and the Armenians love it. There's 1.5 million Armenians, and all of the ones in Boston listen to my show, and some of them in Armenia. So that's really great, because they send me emails and say, thank you so much for airing this information about the genocide, because we cannot get anywhere with it. Every now and again, it comes up again in the Senate or the House, and it looks as though the resolution to recognize the Armenian genocide is going to pass, and then it gets squashed. So they've come within 6 votes of getting that thing passed, and then it gets squashed. And there's a whole history around that many of us don't really know, because we hear about Turkey in a very sort of oblique way. So I'm enjoying the radio work that I'm doing. But I want to finish off with a word from Christiane Amanpour, who She does good stuff, and she sometimes does less good stuff. But she said something that really stayed with me. There are some situations one simply cannot be neutral about, because when you are neutral, you are an accomplice. Objectivity does not mean treating all sides equally. It means giving each side a hearing. And I really like that. And that's what I try and do. I don't want to shut anybody out. There are certain voices that I'm really not interested in having on my radio, but I would like to have more dialogue on my show, and that's kind of hard to do when you're doing it on the phone. But I do like this this thing of what neutrality is and isn't, because I don't think that there is a writer. I don't really call myself a journalist. I call myself a writer. But I don't think there is anyone there who can honestly say that they're neutral, that they don't have a point of view. And I think if you hold that you're giving each side equal airtime, then that's about as neutral as you can get.
Susan Gallimore, she's the author of Long Time Passing, Mothers Speak About War and Terror. She's also the host of Stanford University's Raising Sand Radio. She's a former military mom and a GI rights counselor. We're going to wrap up this Yin Radio show with a brief piece about being on television. Lisa Diamond's the author of Sexual Fluidity, Understanding Women's Love and Desire. It's published by Harvard Press. Her nearly 20 years of research has revealed that many women, more so than men, can be attracted to both men and women, that the definitions of orientation as strictly gay or straight doesn't apply in the same way to women as it does to men. At her February 2010 presentation at the Art of Gender Conference at Idaho State University, I asked Lisa Diamond if her message is being heard.
Well, you know, I was on Oprah. So there, and you know, and not like that means anything except for the fact that if a topic ends up on Oprah, it clearly has, you know, reached some threshold of, you know, awareness, and it's interesting how I hear more about these ideas, you know, and it's funny because, you know, when I was on Oprah, and my partner, you know, was in the audience. And they played, like, Oprah likes to play, like, warm-up music. So they were playing I Kissed a Girl. And the audience members, many of whom are, like, these conservative Southern, you know, women who, like, have traveled from Mississippi to see Oprah, and their grandmothers, they're, like, dancing and they're singing I Kissed a Girl. And my partner said that she was just sort of amazed. And she said, you know, Lisa, you've been... you know, doing this work for years and years and years, and everyone's like, oh, fluidity, whatever. And she was like, and all of a sudden it was like everybody kind of like got it and was okay with it. And she's like, it's not like nothing has changed, but suddenly there's some threshold of awareness where this is no longer a strange idea, where old women are singing I Kissed a Girl and they're not totally freaked out by it. They're not screaming and running away. They're like, oh, I kind of know someone that's kind of fluid. So I do think that there is a little bit, and you see now on television shows, although you know, I have some beef with the way these things are represented on TV and movies. So you see more often now characters will have like one little affair with a woman and then the character will go back to being totally straight. So on one hand, we were like, oh, isn't that great? That's like sexual fluidity. It's like a fluid heterosexual woman. My problem is that on one hand, yeah, I think it's great to have images out there of women, you know, having these experiences and not like dying or being and like having it be like a positive thing. On the other hand, these characters almost always go back to being completely heterosexual. So it's like, ooh, isn't it titillating and fun to see the woman kiss another woman and then, oh, don't worry, next week she'll be right back where she belongs. So I'm not so sure how revolutionary that is, although I think it's better than no visibility. But clearly if those images are out there, people are viewing that they're intelligible, you know, they're legible to the viewership of like, oh, I heard about someone who did something like that. So I do think it's sort of bubbling up in different places. But you will never see a heterosexual male character have a little dalliance with a man and then go back to being straight. You will not see that. That narrative is utterly missing.
Dr. Lisa Diamond, she's a professor of psychology at the University of Utah. Her studies of sexual identity development is changing the way researchers and the rest of us view sexual orientation. Her work has been featured in the New York Times, and she's appeared on Oprah, among other places. Kelly Mays is going to take us out. She tells us to say what you want with her music.
I am right here and now, file for an extension, and we are all together now. There is no exception to finish all my work. I steadily kept venting, I've never been very good at handling rejection. Depression often caused serious infection. She denied me twice, kinda caused regression, and I was often scared of poison and erection. Wasn't about my body, but my heart needed protection. Planning a takeover, universal intervention. We are all of Earth, and she needs well respected. I will stop the virus, please no more injections. And you do not know me, please print the correction.
You can catch past shows and podcasts at www.yinradio.org. YinRadio.org is also where you can sign up to receive updates about the program or make a contribution to support Yin Radio. Opening music is by Piano Chocolat. Yin Radio is produced at KRFP, Radio Free Moscow, in Moscow, Idaho, by VP Foundation and by me. I'm Sandy Billings, your executive producer and host. I'm glad you could join me. Until next week.
Hold the lesson in a planetary fairy running for election. I am steadily building my collection of badass women seeking more than perfection. I am just like you, you are my invention. Both sides of the mirror will create reflection. Sometimes hard to function, I feel a new something. Man's world dysfunction, release all my judgment. You went out to luncheon, we've been right here punching. Called for injunction, and we all been rushing. I've been on my knees, I can hear the pleas of the poor and weak, and I watch them bleed. Powers that be, not staying pleased, taking what they want, not what they need. Yeah, say what you want and say what you need. The time is now, it's time indeed. Open your heart, let your brain free. The wave will start, energy you bleed. You got my air, I'm your friend. Type the vision and press send. I got your back, I can defend. There was no start, there was no end. Say what you want and say what you need. The time is now, it's time indeed. Open your heart, let your brain free. The wave will start, energy you bleed. You got my air, I'm your friend. Type the vision and press send. I got your back. Shows my math.